Hello there. It's good to meet you again, and we've been looking forward to this greeting. We've been looking forward to the time of coming to your family circle and sitting down once again as though we were in your home. Maybe we're sitting there on the couch in the front room, maybe around the dining room table. You know, some of the best home Bible studies I have had is around the kitchen table. It isn't because we like to eat. Well, I'm not going to say we don't like to eat, but it's not that in mind. We are dealing with a type of food, though, a spiritual food. So it's good to have you invite us into your home again. We're going to stay for about a quarter of an hour to look at, well, a very practical subject. You know, we told you when we began this series that James had a lot of practical teaching in it, and we're going to be dealing with one of the most outstanding teachings from the standpoint of that which can be practiced in your life. Now, those of you that have your Bible, turn to the fourth chapter of James, and I hope, as we suggest at the outset of this series, that you read the entire epistle of James. I hope you've done that. And you know, it might help if you'd read it every week. It's only got five chapters in it, and it doesn't take very long to read it, and then think about what you read. We were in the fourth chapter last time we were with you in verse 3, and now we're going to drop down to verse 13. Here James says, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain." Then he goes on to say, "Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life?" That's an interesting question. "It is even as a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or that." So it's an important factor to also realize that the closing verse of this chapter that goes along with this teaching is a conclusion that says, "Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Well, we certainly want to keep sin free from our life. I'm sure that seems to be the desire that all of us have. But going back to verse 13, you'll notice that here's a question that deals with your planning in life. See how practical that is. Anyone knows that if you're going to plan in your life, it's important to keep several factors in mind. And those factors we're keeping in mind are certainly brought out here very clearly as we look at the things we want to do, and let's see how we should do them and what should be a part of our planning. I fear many times as I talk to people that the last thing they think about is the spiritual side or the side of God in their planning. Now, here's a case, let's say, of an individual that James is citing who has all his plans made. He says, "Now today or tomorrow, we'll enter into such a city, and we'll continue there a year, and we'll buy and sell and get gain." And then James kind of puts thumbs down, so to speak, on this, because he says, "Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, how can you say you're going to continue there a year?" He said, "You know, your life is like a vapor that appear for a little while and soon vanisheth away." Well, someone said to me one time when we were talking about this 13th verse, "Well, what's wrong with a person saying, today or tomorrow we're going to go to a certain place, we're going to continue there so long, we're going to buy and sell, and we're going to be successful?" That looks like that person has a well-planned and a confident and positive outlook. That's true. But the one thing that especially is wrong with this 13th verse is the person who did this made no provision whatsoever that if it would be God's will. There isn't anything about God mentioned in the verse. There isn't anything about Christ mentioned in the verse. Well, someone says, "Now that's understood, that God will be behind what we're doing." Well, let's keep this thought in mind, that we certainly don't want to take God for granted. We don't want to make all of our plans in this life and say, "Now we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're going to do the other thing," without considering God in the matter. So it is, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. And you know, I make it a practice, because of what people have told me and because of the importance of it, to, well, put this into my conversation. Put this into my writing. I'm going to do a certain thing, but if it's the Lord's will, I'll do this or I'll do that. Now, to some people, this may be old hat. This may be unnecessary. But you see, James is telling us how to live very close to God. Now, there wouldn't be anything wrong if the person were doing the right thing in saying, "Now, if the Lord wills, I'm planning to leave tomorrow, and I'm going to go to such a city, and I'm going to set up a business there, and I have the prospects of that business being a success." Now, you see, there really isn't anything wrong with that planning, but the idea is, if the Lord wills, and I realize that my life could be snuffed out at any time. But if I'm taking God into my confidence, if I'm considering that God is truly the one that I'm serving, he has the priority in my life, then you see this is going to change the whole picture. Now let's look at that person going into that certain city and buying and selling, but he doesn't get gain. Let's say that his business falls flat. Let's say that the venture that appeared to be so good, that was so glowing that it fell flat. Well, is it a complete loss? No, I don't believe it is. Now, he may have learned a lot from an experience that he had there, and it may help him in future business investigation and business dealing. But the point is that he took God with him on that matter. And undoubtedly, if he had God in mind before he left, he would think about God while he was there. And he would realize that if he did fail in the venture, that it apparently was not God's will that he should be a success. And so he can truly lean upon God in realizing, well, it didn't seem right to God that I should be successful in this venture. Now, I realize that there are people, and there may be some listening as we talk to you today, that, well, they don't see things this way. They think, well, we can believe in God. We can attend the service of the church. But you know, there's so much of that in the world today. I fear one of the greatest problems that may face people religiously is the fact that they divide their life up into little compartments. You know, they say, well, I'm so busy. And this isn't alone true with people who are young in years. It's not alone true with families that are on their way up raising their children and keeping things going, but it's true with senior citizens. I can talk about senior citizens because I am one. And, you know, I find it to be true that a lot of times senior citizens, when they get to the place of where they retire from work, they also retire from the Lord. And I have known senior citizens who become spiritual nomads. They just threw their religious life to the wind, so to speak, and all of it was supposed to be play now because they worked. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with a senior citizen enjoying his life. He has worked. He has labored. But don't leave God out of your planning, whether you're a senior citizen or whether you're a younger person, whatever your circumstance might be in life. That is making a decision that is dreadful. And I've thought about older people. Now, as I was coming up, I especially looked at older people, and if I found someone who had lived the Christian life for a good many years, I thought, well, that person has done that. Now, with the help of God, I can do it. But if I see an older person who is supposed to be true to the Lord, who has become so lax in his or her service to the Lord, and then I look at that person, I say, well, here, how long have they been a Christian? They've been a Christian for maybe 40 years, 50 years. And now here, the whole thing seems to be going up in smoke, so to speak. I realize these are challenging thoughts. And the same thing is true for young people. Don't keep putting off the decision to become a Christian. You see, you can put it off when you're a teenager. You can say, well, I've got a lot to do now. I've got a lot of living to do. Now, that's a far-fetched statement. If you've got a lot of living to do, you can't live better than live with God. That's where you want to be when you leave this world. That's where you want to be in the so-called eternity is with God. So why should you say, well, I'm going to go out here and sow my wild oats, and then after a while I'll settle down? Well, you know what happens? That person a lot of times gets so far from God when he or she's sowing her wild oats that they never get back. And if they do get back, or if they haven't followed that course, if they keep putting this decision off, they say, well, wait until I get married, and my wife and I will be a part of the church. Well, maybe they marry someone that's not even interested in religion. And so then it becomes a problem. And they say, well, now when we have children, we'll see that the children are in the church building. Now, sometimes it happens that the children are brought to the church building and the parents go on their way to do something else. But, you know, the thing that generally happens is that then life becomes so complex that it's difficult to get up on Sunday morning. It's difficult to get the children there, so they don't do it. They're working. Probably both of them are working, which is a case with many families, and they're tired when Sunday morning rolls around. And they think, well, I've certainly got to have one day to rest. I've heard a lot of people say this. And then they say, well, just wait until we get our children grown. And you know, this is a tragic story in putting this thing off and in looking at life and just saying, well, God, you wait. I'll have time for you later on. I realize these are strong words, but I'm sure that you can see that they're true. And we're not trying to be hypercritical as we talk to you today in your home. As we talk to you about the Bible, we're trying to show that the decision that we make in life to tell God no is always a bad decision. I want you to think with me, friends, as we talk about this. How many times in your life have you told God no? And you look at the thing now and you say, you know, when I told God no, I told the devil yes. And you can add up that tally in your life, and the devil's got a lot better score than God has. Now, the time is coming when we won't be in a position to make this decision anymore. I believe Solomon had a good thought in mind. In fact, I know he did, when he said in Ecclesiastes 12:1, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. So into the marketplace of life, into every activity of life, let's take God with us. Let's realize that even though our life is a vapor, that God can make it strong, because if we are prepared spiritually, then we're placing emphasis on that which goes beyond this life and goes into an eternity. We're going to be a part of that. We're either going to be found at the judgment on the left side as one of the goats, or on the right side as one of the sheep. I want you to think about this, and you may have questions. Young people may have questions. Older people may have questions. We're trying to challenge your thinking on this, and we know that the answer is found in the Bible. We want everyone to make a decision to serve the Lord, and as a Christian, to take him into your confidence, and let that be a part of your speaking. Maybe it is already, but let it be a part of your speaking. If the Lord wills, I'll do this or I'll do that. May God bless us all as we obey that marvelous and that wonderful truth.